The following paid program is furnished by Raskin Resources Productions. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff.
Welcome to the Patricia Raskin Show, the program that helps you turn obstacles into opportunities, challenges into solutions, and find answers to tough questions. The award-winning powerhouse voice of radio, Patricia Raskin. And now, here's your host, Patricia Raskin.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to our second hour. We are now on 2 hours, 3 to 5. Very exciting. And welcome to our second hour of the Patricia Raskin Show. Right here on News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM, WPRO. We're the voice of Southern New England. And this half hour is brought to you by the Law Office of Timothy M. Sweet. And Timothy M. Sweet is our guest for this half hour. And today we're talking about divorce and child custody and child support, domestic violence and adoption. So if you have any questions that fall into the family law area, call us at 438-WPRO, 438-9776 or 800-321-9776. Hi, Timothy.
For having me yet again.
Yeah, it's fun.
Happy July.
All right. Here is a, yes, happy summer. It's been nice and warm.
It's gorgeous.
I know. All right. Let's talk about judges. Of course, you know what I think of when I think of that. Our last little, by our Supreme Court judge.
Mm-hmm.
Remember our little lovely comment that she made? So when I use the word judge, immediately that comes to mind. But that's not what we're talking about, Timothy. We're talking about how judges make decisions with parents in terms of when parents are in front of a judge. How does the judge decide about child custody?
There are actually very clear guidelines that judges are bound to go by, set forth in the case law, Supreme Court case law. And always parents think that when they go before a judge, they're not being heard, or that the other party is getting preferential treatment, and that's not actually the case.
It's subjective, and it's not subjective.
No, not at all. There are actually very clear guidelines, very select few factors that a judge can consider, and they will not consider anything else. And actually the most interesting that comes up is, what does the child want? And, of course, you have to take into account the child's age and maturity and their grade, where they are in life. And not only a fact of, you know, does little Tommy want to live with dad or with mom? Why does little Tommy want to live with dad and mom? You know, does he want to live with dad because mom is a little more strict at home and makes him do more chores and has an earlier bedtime and doesn't let him watch certain things on TV?
Let me just ask you, Timothy, what if it's a very small child? Can a judge ask, I'm talking about like 5, 6 years old.
No.
Okay.
No, judges have their own cutoffs, but usually you're looking at something. If you're approaching 11, 12, 13, a judge will give minimal consideration for what that child wants, so long as they're mature enough. And again, getting into why they want what they want. But anything below that, you wouldn't even put a child through
the process of talking to a judge. When a child gives their testimony, if you will, or their reasons, what are the reasons that you think are compelling for the judge to go with one parent or another?
Oh, it could be anything. But again, so long as that the reasons are legitimate, and not because children see the world so differently than you and I do.
Not because, as you said, I've got to go to bed earlier,
exactly.
Or they don't take me to the movies every week.
That's exactly right. But it could be that sometimes a child is not comfortable with parent's significant other, or, you know, dad's new girlfriend, or mom's new boyfriend, or it might be that mom or dad have a very strict work schedule and their career takes them away from the home for too much time. It really could be anything, because every family dynamic is so unique and so different. But it's always the most fascinating factor is, what does the child want and why?
So when you say that the judge goes by strict guidelines that are in the law, what are they?
Well, first and foremost is what the child wants. Again, assuming that he or she is old enough and mature enough, and why they want what they want, what the parents want and why, which parent of the child could foster a better relationship with the other. So if child is placed with mom, is there a factual basis to say that, all right, little Tommy's going to be with mom, but we know for a fact that mom is going to do everything in her power and beyond to make sure that dad has a relationship with little Tommy, even though he's with mom, and vice versa.
Okay.
Which parent can better facilitate and foster a relationship with that child with the other parent who wasn't granted placement? The health of the parents comes in. A lot of people don't realize that when they file and they walk into court, if you walk into court and it's a contested matter and you say, I want this child with me, you better be willing to open up your medical records. Sometimes even your mental health will be considered if there's a red flag. Your criminal history, DCYF history, any kind of drug dependency, and the recent past. You know, judges aren't going to go look into a conviction that's 18 years old. But the moral fitness of the parents does come in. Before I came in here today, obviously I can't go into details, but before I came in here today, I was in my office working on a custody battle. I represent mom, found out some very, very damaging things about dad. The moral fitness of the parent is absolutely fair game, so long as it comes in per the rules of evidence.
Now, let me ask you this. When you say you found out damaging things, this wasn't from the mother. This, you found this out. These were facts.
These were facts that actually mom's father found out. He found out and he sent it to me. He's like, look at this. Is this real? And
then, this was documented.
Yeah. Okay. The stability of the child's home. Obviously, if you're dealing with, if little Tommy is 9 years old, well, there's a history that predates this filing, right? Where has this child lived his whole life? If he's lived in Middletown, Rhode Island, with his mom all 9 years, dad is gonna have a tough time waltzing into court and saying, Tommy should now live in Cranston with me, upend his friends, his family, his little community, his teacher, his pets, his neighborhood.
Or move with me to another state.
Oh, that's a whole, yeah, there aren't enough hours in the day to get into that. But the stability of the home life of the child is big, too.
All right, so that brings up a question. Let's say that the father did say to the judge, look, I have a new job offer. I'm going to be doing very well, or I'm going to be doubling my income. I'm just giving an example. And I want to take Johnny. Okay, now this means we're going to move to Florida, we're going to move to Texas, or whatever it means. And the mother is a very good mother, and the mother wants the child to stay with her.
Yeah.
But the father can offer him more in terms of finances. Does the judge say, well, just give her the money so that she can provide him this kind of life? Or does the judge say, okay, you can take your son to another state?
Yeah, I think you have a little judge in you. I think you'd be great on the bench.
That's
exactly what I think the judge would do in that. See, was like, I think mom will keep the child because child, again, has been in Rhode Island for his entire or her entire little life. And this is what he knows. This is his or her entire universe. But by all means, dad, go to Texas. We'll give you all of summer, all of April and February break, make all this money, and now you can pay three times more in child support. And, of course, dad isn't pleased with that. But, and I tell every single person who comes to my office this, the judges don't care about you, and they don't care about the other parent. They don't care about mom and dad. All they care about is little Tommy, the child. And it sounds so simple, but it gets so convoluted. It really is the simplest precept of any court in any jurisdiction. But you would be amazed how quickly parties and parents blur those lines. If it suits the child, the judge will enter it and will sleep well that night, as they should. So if dad can move to Texas and be a software engineer down there and make 300 grand and pay four times more in child support, as long as it benefits the child. That's the beginning and the end. And all the case law and all the statutory law and all the rules will not
get you passed. I'm going to throw another curveball in for you, okay? So let's take that same scenario, and let's say the mother goes to the judge and says, you know, my ex is going to Texas. He is going to make much more money, and I think he'd be a better fit parent. So the two parents are together in the child moving, but the child doesn't want to go.
Well, again, if the parents agree, honestly, it will never get to a judge. A judge, unless it really is, it's very clearly and abjectly not in the child's best interest. I mean, to provide a silly but timely situation, if the parents said, we want to move to a war-ravaged country, obviously the judge would not sign off on that.
Right.
But subject to all, except for all common sense, this is another key to the family court. The parents should be making these decisions because they know this child and they know one another and they understand their family
so
dynamic.
So you really want to help the parents to make the decision without getting to the judge?
If at all
That's
possible.
That's what you want to do.
Yes, if at all possible. No matter how much enmity between these parents, they should be making these decisions.
And what are you seeing, Timothy? Are you seeing a lot of dissension? Are you seeing more parents that are cooperative and working together? Are you seeing more that aren't? Or is it mixed?
It's always mixed, and it's pretty consistent. It's always the same. There's not more contentiousness at a certain time of year or one year more than another. It's pretty consistent.
It's the people.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be the people. Okay. We're taking your questions, folks. Fascinating. 438-WPRO, 438-9776, 800-321-9776. Any questions you have about family law, child custody? You may be a grandparent listening to this, concerned about your family, an aunt or uncle. We are taking your calls because this, again, program is for you. We're also taking any calls that you might have about it could be, again, distribution of assets, right?
Right.
And it could also be about violence. It could be about adoption. It could be about any of those things that you work with in your practice. And also, as you said, now, how does adoption, do you want to talk about that for a minute? How does that fit in here? I mean, how do you work with that in your practice?
There are a bunch of obstacles right off the bat to adoption. It is the more tricky of the filings in the family court. The first thing you should know, if you want to adopt a child or you want to place your child up for adoption, is that that child has to live with the would-be adoptive parent for 6 months before you even go to court. The child has to live with the parent who will be adopting for 6 consecutive months before you even file. There are ways around it, but they're rare. Mm. That's one rule of thumb. The other one is the adoptive parent has to be married, which a lot of people don't know and understand.
What age are we talking about here with adoption?
Well, adoption, theoretically, it could be any age.
It could be birth?
Could be. But so obviously that would be an exception to the six-month rule. And you can go see the chief judge if you want to get around the six-month rule, but it's not easy. So the idea is that the family court has a policy. They want to make sure that you understand what you're getting into and that there aren't...
No matter what age the child is. All right, we've got Vic on the phone. Vic from Warwick, your question for Tim.
It's not just a question, how are you guys doing? I'm a licensed investigator, legal investigator for about 30 years, and one of the things that I've done, I just wanted the counsel to kind of talk about a little bit more, is that, you know, one spouse cannot just say that their other spouse is doing something. They need evidence, and you're just going to kind of prove these facts, because there's a lot of times that I've dealt with people, I'm sure the counselor has, where one party says that my ex-spouse is doing something, but you just can't say that. You have to prove it, and I think that's an important part of the puzzle. That's all.
Absolutely, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you, counselor. Thank you.
Any comments about that?
These things are very difficult to prove, and that's why actually the court relies heavily on DCYF and on investigators like Vic, is that because at some point when there's a breakdown in a relationship, whether there was an end of a marriage or not, the parents view one another through a certain prism whereby which the other is never given the benefit of the doubt. And anything real or imagined or exaggerated that is wrong with the child will always be the fault of the other parent, no matter what. And more often than not, though not always, it is because of, and it stems from the breakdown of that relationship. It doesn't matter if the relationship ended 2 weeks ago or 12 years ago, the hurt and the feelings and the pain and strife from the end of that relationship colors the way the parents view one another, married or not. And therefore, and judges, the family court judges understand this excellently, is that because of the way one ex looks at the other, that informs and colors how they look at how the child is being raised. So you can't just go, he's right, Vic is absolutely right, you can't just go and make these allegations. The difficulty is proving them at an evidentiary hearing.
And one question, I know Vic hung up, but Vic, if you wanted to call back, and I think the question for him would be when he's done these investigations, what if he does them and he's finding the opposite to be true? In other words, the woman hires him to check out on the ex, but he's not finding anything, and he's maybe seeing something different that wouldn't help her case. But she hired him, but he's not finding what she wants.
In a sense, it's the court who hires and sends out the investigators. The court or DCYF could do it independently if ordered by a judge. So really they report back to the court, and that's why, just like the judge, they are a neutral third party.
Okay.
And they don't...
And they have to stay neutral.
Of course.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you're listening to The Patricia Raskin Show, brought to you by the Law Office of Timothy M. Sweet for this half hour. Call us at 438-WPRO, 438-9776, or 800-321-9776. And we're on News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO. We're the voice of Southern New England. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. We are back. You were listening to the Patricia Raskin Show right here on News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO. We are the voice of Southern New England. I was just telling my guests how much I love them, basically. You know, you have guests on a lot, and the information's so good and exciting, and it's really a thrill and an honor for me. And folks, if you want to know who I have on the show, I do a newsletter every month. So just log on, patriciaraskin.com. It's on my homepage, but just write to me, and I'll send you a copy of my newsletter every month. And like me on Facebook, Patricia Raskin, or my business, Patricia Raskin, Raskin Resources. I have two Facebook pages. All right, so this half hour is brought to you by the Law Office of Timothy M. Sweet, and we are talking to Timothy Sweet this morning or this afternoon about divorce, child custody, child support, domestic violence, and adoption. So we still have a few minutes if you'd like to call in with your questions for him, 438-WPRO, 438-9776, 800-321-9776. How can people find you?
TimothyMSweetLaw.com. You can call me at 401-595-1665, or you can always Google me.
Okay, and you will answer their emails and...
As soon as possible.
Okay, I know sometimes you get into a crunch with your cases. And you have a local, an 800 number too, yes?
They actually, all of the numbers are formatted so they will send right to my cell phone. So any number of mine you find online will connect right to my cell phone. It'll all funnel through the same, 401-595-1665. Can't miss me.
Okay, terrific. All right. Let's talk a little bit about educating clients about the divorce process. Because sometimes, and just from things I've heard, from experience, people will come in and, you know, they're really hell-bent on what they have to do. But sometimes they really don't get the process. You know, they don't understand the length of it. They don't understand the ins and outs of it. They're just, this is what I want, and I want it now.
Of course. Sure. And why would they? You know, they've been out living their lives and raising their kids and building a career, and, you know, whoever wants to think about it. It's not unlike a trip to the DMV in that way. But one thing people don't always know is that when you mention the length of it, the length of a divorce is almost entirely in control of the spouses. Your divorce can take 2 to 5 months if you can agree on the majority of the major issues. It can take 2 years if you don't and you want to string everything out and you want to use the family court process as a sword to get back at the other spouse. I tell this story all the time because it's emblematic. Because sometimes it's not, people aren't actually fighting about the carrot on the stick. So they're not actually fighting about half a 401k, or Thanksgiving time with little Tommy, or the timeshare, or, you know, the main home. They're fighting about it because it's the last chance to get back at him or at her. I'll never forget my all-time favorite family law anecdote. This is my last time on here for a little while, so I'll use it now. We had a divorce nearly finished. We had all the major issues figured out, and I had husband at that time, and husband said, "I'm not signing anything nor agreeing to anything unless and until I get in my hand my wife's wedding dress. I want her wedding gown from the wedding. I won't agree to anything unless I have that in hand, and then I'll sign this document."
Did your mouth drop?
Oh, no, I've heard and seen it all by now. You cannot surprise a family court attorney.
Well, do you understand, by the way, do you understand that, his reasoning, by the way? I mean, do you...
I suppose I understand the psychosis. I don't know if I'd call it an understanding.
You call it reasoning, right?
Right.
And what happened? He got the dress.
Oh, I don't know, because I quit. I quit on the spot.
Really?
I doubt he got the dress.
Wow.
And I doubt that.
You know, speaking of things, I have to tell you something. I lived in North Carolina for about 15 years. I'm originally from this area.
Everyone who's been to North Carolina loves it, by the way.
It's a beautiful...
I've never spoken to anyone who's been to NC.
And I was on the coast, very much like the coast here. But warmer. But the reason I'm telling you this is that in North Carolina, they have a law. Now, I think it's still there, but I'm not sure. And you can call it antiquated, which it is, but it does have some, I think, some merit to it. In North Carolina, you cannot be divorced unless you are separated for a whole year.
Wow.
So what happens is you then go for the divorce and you separate. And then you have to have that date when you separate. And then you are not, the day after or 2 days after that separation from a year, then the legal divorce happens. And if you go back and cohabitate with your ex in any way, it starts all over. I mean, I don't know who would find that out unless it was an investigator.
Yeah.
It starts from the beginning.
I think there's a lot of people lying to judges down in North Carolina. It sounds great, but
But it gives you a year so that you don't come back in.
That's absolutely. And again, in theory, it's great, but it's another year of health insurance. It's another year of who's going to pay this mortgage because there's only one of us living there. And what do we do if we can't afford it on a single income? It's another year before you get to see a judge about kids. Mm-hmm. So you're going to move out. One of you is going to move out. You're going to go a year without seeing a judge.
1 year of separation.
Yeah,
well, no, you can still carry on, but you can't. You are not legal. It's not a legal document.
Oh, but you can get court orders in the interim dealing with, I can see little Tommy at this time.
Yes, but you are not legally.
So it's a formality.
So if you wanted to remarry, you couldn't remarry for a year.
Oh, that's fine. I think that's great.
As long as you
can see a judge in the interim, that's...
Yeah, and you have the agreement. Well, no, you'll have the agreement.
Yeah.
So the agreement, you'll have the agreement.
Yeah.
But again, and then the judge agrees, but then again, you can't go back. It's that whole year until it's reinforced.
Call the legislator.
But again, and it's not just cohabitate. If you spend any intimate time with that person, that's it.
Yep.
You have to go back to the beginning.
Can't hang out on the couch and watch Netflix.
No, you can't.
Nope. Start all over again.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tim, Timothy, I know that in the future you'll be back with us.
I promise.
All right. And we're so excited to have you in. Tell us again how people can find you.
TimothyMSweetLaw.com. I know that's a lot. 401-595-1665. You can look for me on Facebook or Google or Avvo, AVVO. And, it all connects to my cell phone, so you can get me anytime. And if you call while I'm in court, then you'll get a text back instead of a call back. Promise.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. All right. And next up, we will have Gabrielle Doucette, who is a registered nurse. She's the author of Let Go and Let Love, Survivors of Suicide Loss, and a Healing Handbook, and we'll be talking with her. This half hour has been brought to you by Timothy M. Sweet Law Office, and the next half hour is brought to you Gabriel Doucette. If you had loss in your life of any type, listen up, because this program's for you. It's really so important. We all have loss, no matter what it is. And Gabriel will give us some wonderful tips. You're listening to The Patricia Raskin Show right here on News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO. We're the voice of Southern New England. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.